Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is the Democratic nominee for Oklahoma's 1st Congressional District, Kodjo Asamoah Caesar. Asamoah Caesar is a native of Alexandria, Virginia, a first-generation American and son of immigrants from Ghana who worked as a nursing assistant and taxi driver. He was the first in his family to go to college. He graduated from Old Dominion University and William and Mary Law School. Rather than working in law, he joined Teach for America and was assigned to Tulsa. He became a kindergarten teacher and was named Teacher of the Year at his school site in his second year of teaching. He later became the founding principal of the Greenwood Leadership Academy, an elementary school in North Tulsa, and he also served as the interim executive director of 36 Degrees North, a base camp for entrepreneurs in downtown Tulsa. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa as he runs for the 1st Congressional District seat on November 3rd. Kodjo Asamoah Caesar, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rich.
This is your first attempt at elective office, and I have to ask you, why did you decide to run for Congress?
Well, I think, first of all, I believe that our state leaders in Oklahoma are engaged in a grave dereliction of duty. I am an educator. I graduated law school and became a kindergarten teacher here in Oklahoma, and I came to quickly find out that our state leaders were, you know, literally defunding our education system. Since 2009, we lead the nation in cuts to our education budget. And there's a whole slew of issues where I believe they are failing us. So I'm running for Congress to go over their heads and bring much-needed resources from the federal government to our state, and also to use those resources to compel them to do their constitutional duty in educating our populace and in creating a state that works for all of us. All right, so that's the first reason. The second reason is we have a president who has been talking about Make America Great Again. So he is positing a theory of what makes America great. And being a son of immigrants who came to this country in pursuit of the American dream, who sacrificed friends, family, familial settings, and traveled 5,000 miles across the Atlantic to come to this nation, they believed this nation was great. But they didn't believe it was great because of the kinds of things that Donald Trump is talking about. They believe that here in America, it didn't matter where you were born, what family you were born into, what zip code you lived in, you had an opportunity to fulfill your highest potential. So I am running on that story to try to make an America that is lives up to its promise and one that works for all of us.
Let me ask you, if you're elected, what would be your first priority as a new congressman from Oklahoma?
Yeah, you know, Rich, we announced this campaign November 5th of last year, and we've been all across the 1st District of Oklahoma, right? Not just in Tulsa, but gone to Broken Arrow and Bartlesville, you know, Washington County, Wagner County. And the issues on people's minds are consistent and constant in Oklahoma. It's education. It's criminal justice, it's health care, and it's economic security. And then all of that is compounded in this moment by the coronavirus, and trying to ensure that we bend this curve and get back to some sense of normalcy. And so for me, as a law school grad who became a kindergarten teacher here in Oklahoma, education is the foundation of building opportunity, right, for our kids and our families. And so that will be my number one priority. You know, when I arrived here in 2013, we had 32 emergency certified teachers in the state of Oklahoma. These are teachers who are not certified to teach, but because we're in dire need of teachers, we allow them to teach for 2 years until they get their certification. We went from 32 when I arrived to over 3,000 emergency certified teachers last year. All right. In the past 6 years, we've lost over 30,000 teachers. So we are in dire need of education funding, of paying our teachers well, so we can retain our best teachers and attract, right, the best and the brightest into the teaching profession, because they are the number one school-based variable to student success. And if our students aren't doing well, then that doesn't bode well for the future of our state, you know, the future of our economy, right? So education is vitally important, and it's connected to all the other issues that are on voters' minds.
Now, one of the things you said is you wanted to really go over the state's head in becoming a federal legislator. Wouldn't it be more effective to work on the state level and try to change things at the state level if that's really your priorities?
Well, that's a great question, and it's one that I've gotten on the campaign trail. And the way I explain it is this. You know, we've essentially been a one-party state in terms of our elected leaders, right, for a long time. And Republicans have the governorship. They have supermajorities, right, in the state Senate and the state House. So were I to run for the state legislature, I'd be in the super minority, right, and it would be hard to get anything done. And I believe part of the reason why we have this state of affairs is also because of gerrymandering, and we have our elected officials choosing their voters instead of the other way around. So we know that every 10 years after we take the census, the party in power in each state gets to draw the district maps. And if you look at Oklahoma's district maps, it looks like animal crackers, right? based on the gerrymandering. And so the elected leaders don't really reflect the will of the people, in my opinion, right? Because of gerrymandering. And the proof is in the pudding. When you look at our state ballot initiatives, when we present questions to the people, they end up on the opposite side of our elected officials. So in 2016, when it came to like criminal justice reform and reclassifying certain nonviolent drug offenses from felonies to misdemeanors, the people voted yes on that. In 2018, the question was, do we legalize medical marijuana? Our state leaders, elected leaders, have been saying no for a long time, and the people said yes on that. And then just this year, and this June, the question was, do we expand Medicaid under Obamacare? And the people said yes. All right, so it shows you there's a disconnect between the will of the people and the elected leaders and the state legislature. Right. So I am deciding to go right over the heads. And being that I'm in the first congressional district, which is anchored by Tulsa County, and CD5, which is anchored by Oklahoma County and OKC, Kendra Horn was able to flip that seat in 2018 for the first time in 30 years, right? And right. I believe that we're next in CD1. If I were to win, I'd flip this seat for the first time in 34 years, all right? So that is a more viable path to change for me than just running at the state level.
Let's talk about your platform is unabashedly progressive, and right at the very top is about education and opportunity. And you're very clear on what you want to work for. It's enact universal child care, universal pre-K, and increasing education funding, eliminating tuition at public colleges and universities, and canceling student loan debt. Some of those, I think of those as state issues. Eliminating tuition at public colleges and universities, that's a decision that's left up to the state. Whether to offer universal pre-K, each state makes those decisions. How would you work for that on the federal level?
So, Rich, in this moment in time, there really aren't clear-cut lines of state issue, federal issue, local issue. Right. All these issues affect all of us, and we expect our leaders to help us to solve these issues and to create communities of opportunity for all of us. Right. And quite frankly, when you're a teacher and you are getting paid $32,000 a year, when you're a worker and you're making a minimum wage of $7.25 and you're having to work two jobs just to make ends meet. Right, you don't care where the help comes from. You just want help. In Oklahoma, we're second in the nation in the percentage of people who don't have access to health care. Right? People want access to high-quality, affordable health care, and they're not caring where it comes from. Right? Obviously, there's different jurisdictions and authorities in terms of responsibilities we have to people, but right, you have federal legislation and resources that seek to come and rectify that. And unfortunately, we have a state and state leaders who for a decade rejected expansion of Medicaid, even though our citizens and residents were paying into the federal coffers. And yet we weren't able to access these funds to be able to give people health care. And thankfully, the people this year decided, no, we do want that federal money to come to our state to help improve our health care and our health outcomes, right? And I think the people of Oklahoma would welcome federal money to help ensure that our education system is well funded to help ensure that we have affordable child care and that mothers and fathers aren't having to go to work just to pay for child care or having to stay home because, you know what, it's probably better to just stay home and be with my kids than to go to work just to pay for child care. All right. And so, you know, and especially if you're in a state like Oklahoma, where our leaders, like I said, are engaged in this brave dereliction of duty, they seem to be more interested in their own interests rather than the common interests of the people, then we have to find whatever means we can to bring about meaningful and needed change. And that's what I'm committed to.
Well, certainly the universal child care, that is something the federal government can help states enact, help provide the funding to do that. Are you looking at funding incentives for states to, say, enact universal pre-K, eliminate tuition, or at least reduce tuition at public colleges and universities?
Yeah. Well, you know, and one of the things I also tell people is this. Like, you know, when I get elected, I'll be in the U.S. House of Representatives. We have five representatives that we sent from Oklahoma to Washington. I'll be one of 435 House members. So there's a House and there's a Senate with 100 senators, and then there's a president, right, in the executive branch. And so these aren't plans that I have on my own accord and I can enact, right? I have to work with other people. So I am not just pulling these things out of the air. We have a presidential candidate in Joe Biden and the vice presidential candidate in Kamala Harris who are committed to these same issues and these same values, right? They have plans for child care tax credits to ensure that child care is more affordable, all right, and accessible to as many families as possible and reduces the burden on them. They have plans to lower the cost of education, all right, and ensure that our students are not drowning in student loan debt, which not only affects them, but affects our broader economy. Right? And so my platform is within a context and a broader context of these progressive values of trying to make investments in people that will be able to reap rewards and see returns throughout our economy. Right?
So are you saying these goals are aspirational?
Not that they're aspirational. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that they are value state. They are value statements, right? And so it's all about how do we build an America as good as it's promised? How do we build communities of opportunity where people can truly be able to fulfill their highest potential, all right? And so if we state these values and say, let's make investments. For instance, every dollar we invest in early childhood education, we save $7, right? So education is an investment. It's not just an expense. And it doesn't just help the people that are, you know, benefiting. It helps our broader economy, and it helps all of us in the long run. All right. So that's what I mean is that these are value statements and things that we ought to do to not only help people, but help all of us and help our economy. And we can actually do it. And we need to make these investments.
My guest today is Kodwo Asamoah-Caesar. He's the Democratic nominee for Oklahoma's 1st Congressional District. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Before we talk more about your ideas that you would like to push for as a congressman, if you're elected, what would you like people to know about you personally that may help make them make a more informed choice in voting?
Yes, I'm a husband. I actually met my wife right here in Tulsa on June 4th, 2013. I came from the East Coast, Alexandria, Virginia, to Tulsa to teach. And she came from the West Coast in California to teach here. And we met and we got married 3 years to the day we met. So we got married June 4th, 2016. We have a home. We built a home in North Tulsa. We just had our first daughter this year on April 10th, Hadessa Eden. We have two dogs. And so we're here. This is home for us now. And I'm a son. I'm a son of immigrants who came to this country in search of the American dream. They believed America was the land of opportunity. It was the promised land. And here in America, it didn't matter what family you were born into, what zip code you were born into. You could, you know, you worked hard, applied yourself, you could go as far as your talents would take you. And so the American dream is very significant in my life, and it's really driven a lot of my decisions. So I was the first in my family to graduate from college. Then I went on to law school at the oldest law school in the nation at William & Mary. And then after graduating law school, I decided I wanted to pay it forward. And I wanted to help make sure that other people could access to American Dream. So I decided I was going to become a teacher and a kindergarten teacher at that. And I asked Teach for America to send me to where the need was highest. And they sent me to Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I'm so glad they did because I've learned so much. I've met some wonderful, incredible people. And I am committed to ensuring that we build a state that works for all of us. Right? And I'm committed to selfless leadership and public service. So that's why I'm running for office now to make that happen.
You're running on, as I mentioned, your platform. You're standing for educational opportunity, for health and economic security, for social justice and equity, and for environmental action. I want to ask about some of the items in your platform. One is something that's likely to come up for the next congressman right after you take the oath of office, whether it's you or your opponent. Is, you know, there's going to be a moratorium on evictions that's going to end at the end of the year. One of your platform items is providing affordable housing for all who need it. You're going to have to vote on what to do about this moratorium that will be ending that, you know, the CDC put in place. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, what we've learned about a lot of things during this pandemic is that there are these issues that exist, and they've been exacerbated by the pandemic. And, you know, we've taken measures to help to stem the impacts and the ill effects of these issues during this pandemic. And I guess the pandemic has given us an excuse to be able to do that. But, you know, in a non-pandemic world, there are still people who are struggling with these same difficult issues, right? So hopefully, during this time, we've all gotten a chance to be reflective and develop some empathy, right? There have been people that I've met who've said, you know, I used to donate money to the food bank, and here I am actually standing in line waiting to get food from this food bank, right? Our food stamp rolls ballooned to over 6 million people during this time, right? And so hopefully, like, you don't want to see that. So hopefully people and voters get to have empathy to understand that just because you're poor, just because you don't have access to health care, just because you don't have access to quality education or housing, isn't a character flaw, right? It's not you're just lazy and you don't want to work and you deserve the position that you're in, right? So I think that's the mindset we ought to have and approach these issues with. We know that in housing, there's a profit imperative, and you have developers and you have people in real estate. Like, you know, there has to be an incentive to be able to provide housing for people and people who can be able to pay that. And like you said, this is where government can step in. What kind of society do we want to have? What kinds of communities do we want to live in? Right. And is it beneficial to the public to help ensure that nobody has to experience homelessness, right, and be out in the cold, right, without a place to live? You know, there was a study done that showed that in no county in America can anyone afford a two-bedroom apartment based on the minimum wage, the real minimum wage in most states. That just tells you there's a significant problem here, an issue here, and government needs to step in and try to help solve it. And so for me, the way I come at this, my campaign slogan is Bridge the Divide. So I am trying to bring people together to help us be able to have a chance at solving these very difficult problems. So I don't have the market cornered on the best answers and the right answers, but I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to come to the table, and let's work together to, you know, come to a sensible, meaningful solution. All right. And so that's been my approach. Right. So that's why if you look at my platform, it's about value statements rather than policy prescriptions, because I can admit that I don't have all the answers. But I do know that I want to live in a state that works for all of us, and I want to live in an America that lives up to its promise, and that we can do something about these seemingly intractable issues.
I have to ask about one of those policy areas that you do write about, and that is environment and infrastructure. You're in a community that once built itself as the oil capital of the world. You're talking about transition to 100% renewable energy, offering transition for energy workers. Give us a sense of how you envision that happening in this community that has traditionally been so dependent on fossil energy.
Yeah, and you know, we can all acknowledge that we have been dependent on that, right? And that has been, right, the horse we've been riding. But you know, when the Model T gets created, and we have to transition away from horses, like, we can't just say, "I'm going to ride this horse until it bucks me," right? Like, we have to prepare for the future. And I'm not the only one saying we have to transition to renewable energy, right? Matter of fact, BlackRock, right, the largest investment firm in the world, came out earlier this year and said they are, you know, divesting from fossil fuels, right, and looking for sustainable, right, investments. And so if we just keep riding this horse, it is going to buck us. And not only, you know, the environmentalists are going to move away, the market is going to move away from us. Our industries are not going to be able to access the capital markets that we need to keep our industries, you know, thriving here in Oklahoma. So all I'm saying is, let's ensure that the oil capital of the world is at the table when we're talking about the future of energy, right? Let's bring our workforce, our expertise, right, our, you know, industry experts to the table to be part of this conversation, because this is where the world is going. This is where the market is moving. And it's going to be great, not just for our climate, not just for our kids, but also for our economy. We can be the leaders of this transition, right? And because we know energy, we understand it. And so that's all I'm saying. And so I'm willing to be a convener, right? And let's face facts, right? And then let's be, like, part of shaping our own destiny for the 21st century energy economy. So that's what I'm saying we ought to do. And I think when I talk to the workers in the industry, they understand this, and they just want to understand how we can transition in a meaningful way that doesn't upset their lives, right, and their standard of living. And I think that's where government can come in and help ensure that that's the case.
Well, what can government do for, say, a roughneck who has lived in Oklahoma all of his life and worked on oil rigs, or for that matter, a petroleum engineer or a chemical engineer? You know, you're asking them to transition to electrical engineering, and that's maybe something they haven't, you know, they haven't worked on in a long time, and maybe that's going to be a very difficult transition. How do you reassure them that their way of life is not affected by this transition?
Well, one, you have to be very honest with them that, yeah, it sucks. It sucks to be in an industry that's going to be transitioning, right? Like, nobody wants to. We want to find work and do that till we die, right? But it is. This is, change is a constant in our economy, and it's happening. But we can get ahead of it, right? Government has been responsible for passing, you know, Marshall plans and the GI Bill, right? And, you know, engaging in job retraining, right? We can do that. We can ensure that people have a soft landing and that they can learn new skills. And it doesn't have to be completely new skills. They can use the relevant skills that they have, right, and apply them to new ways of working and new, you know, technology. But we have to do that. And we have to be able to say, this is going to be difficult, but you have, right, government and elected officials who are coming alongside you to help ensure that it's a smoother transition than it otherwise would be, right? Because what would be worse is this, if we just leave it to market forces, and then you wake up one day and the whole industry has just been overtaken, and we have massive layoffs, and now you're sitting there carrying the bag by yourself with no help, right, and no guidance. Right? So yeah, I'm honest about that, and it's tough. But you know, how can we help to ensure that it's smoother than it otherwise would have been?
My guest today is Kodjo Asamoah-Cesar. He's the Democratic nominee for Oklahoma's 1st Congressional District. We're running out of time, but I do want to mention real quick, you have a number of issues on justice and equity, everything from ending the practice of family separation, working to strengthen DACA, or perhaps immigration reform. It doesn't mention that, but I'd like to hear very quickly your thoughts on that, as well as you mentioned stop over policing black and brown communities and in the war on drugs. These are big issues, and I'm sorry, just a couple of minutes. What are your main points on justice and equity that you want to get across as a congressman if you're elected?
I think the way I want to frame justice and equity is in the notion of being one nation, right? And, you know, people, I hear from people, they are sick and tired of the tone and tenor of our politics, the fact that we seem so divided, and we see that exacerbated, right, in this time by not just the coronavirus, but the racial unrest that exists, protests we're seeing in the streets. So people want to be able to come together and move forward together as one nation, right? Well, the thing we have to do is we have to deal with, right, the truth about what's going on in our country, the truth about our history, right? There has to be, in order for there to be reconciliation, there has to first be truth, right? And so we have to see what's going on. We know that, right, the war on drugs was, in a sense, manufactured to benefit politicians, right? They said that themselves, right, coming at people from the Nixon administration, saying that this was part of their electoral strategy. And we have, unfortunately, used something like marijuana as a way to incarcerate a whole lot of black and brown people and as a way to really send police into black and brown communities that are using drugs at the same rates as white communities, but they are arrested and sentenced, right, to longer sentences than, right, their white counterparts, right? So these things matter because they do create the divide and the separation, right? The injustice and inequities prevent us from being one nation, and it leads to the unrest we see on our streets. So I always like to say justice and equity is more about the future, or just as much about the future, as it is about the past. And when we go back and talk about the history of this country, we're not going back just to stay there and just to say you should feel guilty. We're saying, no, because of this past, right, we are in our current circumstances, and we can address it so that we can move forward, so that my daughter 10 years, 20 years from now is not having to have the same fights that we've been having all this time, right? So that's really the value statement when it comes to justice and equity. And I think we ought to build a better world for our kids to inherit, where they are truly judging people by the content of their character and not the color of their skin.
Kodjo Asamoah-Caesar, we're just about out of time. You're the Democratic nominee for the 1st Congressional District. Why should folks vote for you in November?
Yes, I would really, really love your vote. I am a selfless leader, a son of immigrants who came to this country in pursuit of the American dream because they thought in America everyone would have an equal shot at opportunity to fulfill their highest potential. I graduated from law school and decided to become a kindergarten teacher so that all kids would have the same kind of opportunities that I had. I was fortunate enough to walk through the doors of opportunity, and I want to leave those doors wide open so that others can also walk through that. And when we do that, we are a better nation, and it not only benefits those kids, it benefits all of us, all right? So I believe that we need selfless leaders, not self-dealers, and that it is within our power to build an Oklahoma that works for all of us. And so I am asking for your vote on November 3rd, or even before. If you're doing mail-in balloting or voting early, make sure you have a plan to vote. Make sure you express your voice. And the highest office in a democracy is the office of citizens. So don't let anybody take away your vote. And I hope I can earn your vote.
Thank you so much for your time, Kodjo.
Thank you, Rich. I appreciate it.
Kodjo Asamoah-Caesar is the Democratic nominee for Oklahoma's 1st Congressional District. You can learn more about his campaign at kodjoforcongress.com. Of course, Election Day is coming up November 3rd. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Studio Tulsa is produced by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.